I unscrewed the cap and said, "A damn fool." And with a smile, I took a quick sip. It was an explosion of flavor unlike anything I'd tasted in a long time. I slowly capped the jug as I savored the elixir.
"We got a deal?"
"Oh, we got a deal. That is damn fine wine. As a matter of fact, I want the other one too. I'll be right back." I went to the buggy and got 4 more meals and carried them back to the table. The old man collected them up and turned to leave. "Where are you going?" I asked.
"I'm done for the day. I'm going home to eat."
Eric walked up and leaned over my shoulder, asking, "What's that?" I looked at the 2 jugs and replied, "Oh, just a little something for a party." He reached out for one of the jugs, and I slapped his hand.
"You will have to wait."
He looked at me, then at the jugs. "But what is it?" I smiled.
"You'll see at the party."
Picking the jugs up, I headed back towards the buggy.
"But what is it?"
he called out as I walked away. I just laughed and shook my head. The market was uneventful, aside from my dealing in liquor, and we left and headed for Eustace. I was sitting in the passenger seat as Jess pulled out onto 19. Eric leaned forward and asked,
"You want to put those back here?"
Inquiring about the jugs sitting in my lap.
"Nope, I'm good."
He lingered for a minute. I could feel him wanting to ask.
"You'll see soon enough,"
I shouted, and he slumped back into his seat. It was killing him, and I was loving it. Jess was headed to Eustace when I called for her to pull over at a most unexpected sight. A bucket truck was sitting on the side of the road with its bucket up in the air and a man in it. As we got closer, I could see it was Scott, one of the engineers. We rolled to a stop beside the truck, and I got out to a smiling baker.
"Like my new truck?"
she asked. I was slack-jawed and nodding.
"Where did you find it?"
"Cecil actually found it. I think it belonged to the city of Eustace. It took the mechanics over at the armory about an hour to get it running."
"No shit?"
"That's going to make the job of getting power back up so much easier."
She looked up at Scott, working in the bucket, and nodded.
"You like this better than climbing those poles?" she shouted.
He looked down.
"Hell yes! We've already done more work today than we did in 3 days prior."
I looked at the lines they were working on.
"What are you doing? Cutting the sidelines?"
Baker nodded.
"Yeah, we're just trying to get a solid line into town. We can always come back and add sidelines in later."
"Good call. This is awesome. Is there anything going on in town?"
"I don't really want to go in there if I don't have to."
She shook her head.
"No, Shane is doing a pretty good job. Between him and Mitch, they keep everything under control. That, and it's so damn hot, no one is doing anything. During the day, the town is virtually deserted."
"Good. That's how I like it. I guess we'll drive by the farm for a minute before heading back home."
"They're pretty busy over there right now," Baker said. "Crops are coming in, and they're trying to harvest it as fast as they can."
Terry was standing at the rear of the bucket truck, acting as Scott's ground man.
"They need to hurry, or the people in town will get it before they can."
"What the hell are they stealing it for?" Eric asked. "It's for them."
"It's the whole bird-in-the-hand argument."
I shook my head. "Everyone is just out for themselves. I imagine it's even worse now, since they all saw that mushroom cloud. I'm sure panic is probably pretty high." Terry snorted.
"Some people have gone batshit crazy."
"You guys need anything from me?" I asked.
"No,"
Baker replied. I waved Jess on, and we headed towards the farm. Since I wasn't driving, it gave me time to really take in the scenery. I'd driven this road many times since the day, but it was like I was seeing it for the first time, as though I'd been away for a long time and just now returned. Grass was now growing, quite far out into the road. The roadsides were a tangled mass of vegetation, some of it so tall it was falling over on itself. You couldn't see far off either side of the road because of the tall weeds and even small trees that were now crowding the roadside. I tapped Jess on the shoulder and pointed to a church that had been under construction before things changed. Jess pulled on to what was once the dirt driveway, but now was nearly indistinguishable from the rest of the field surrounding the construction site. All manner of building supplies was still stacked as though it were waiting for the crews to return to work, but it didn't look new now. Time had taken its toll on the materials. Rust and dust covered every surface. Vines creeped their way up from the ground and were taking over pallets that were now unrecognizable. But I could see what I was looking for and pointed it out to Jess, and she weaved in and around the piles and stopped.
"That's a lot of copper," Eric said,
looking at the long stack of copper roofing intended for the church. "Climbing out," I said.
"Sure is, and it'll make a great still."
Fred and Eric got out and walked over to the stack.
"What are you making a still for?" Fred asked.
"We can use it for a number of things, but right now I'm going to use it to make vinegar."
"That's why you got those grapes from Jenna," Eric said. I nodded.
"And the honey from Mario. I'm going to give it a shot."
"Are we going to take this now?" Eric asked, looking at the war wagon. He was clearly wondering how in the hell we would load a 20-foot-long, 3-foot-wide sheet.
"No. I'll come back with some tin snips and cut it up so we can get it out of here."
"I want to go inside and look around," Jess said.
"Go ahead. I'm going to hang out here," I replied.
Fred chased after her, saying, "I'll come with you." The girls ran off, and Eric and I climbed up on top of the stack of copper. While he sat dangling his feet, I stood up and looked around. It was a bit of a vantage point over the tall weeds, and I could see all across the field behind the church. To the west ran the train tracks that used to serve the orange juice plant. I was shocked to see the field full of corn.
"Holy shit! Who planted that?" I asked, as I looked across it.
Eric stood up.
"Wow, that's a shitload of corn. It's funny how early on no one wanted to work in the fields. Now look at it."
He sat back down. I sat down beside him.
"From the sounds of it, there's plenty of people wanting to get into the field now."
"Yeah,
so they can grab as much as they can carry and take it home."
Eric shook his head in irritation.
"Why can't they just wait? The food is for them. All they have to do is wait for it to be harvested, and they'll all get some."
"Hunger is a powerful motivator, especially if you have kids."
I leaned in and bumped him.
"As you're about to find out."
He nodded. "I'm worried about that. What are we going to feed the baby?"
"I think Fred has the necessary equipment for the first year," I replied with a smile.
"I know that. I mean later. When he's ready to eat real food, what are we going to feed him?"
With mock surprise, I asked,
"So it's a son, then? And you know this how?"
He looked at me.
"Of course it's a boy."
Laughing, I said, "Well, we can always use another strong back. Don't worry about the food. Baby food in little glass jars is a relatively new thing. Not to mention, most of the children the world over have never seen it."
"I guess you're right," he replied,
as we heard the girls making their way back to us. "I just want the best for him." I patted his leg.
"Of course you do, Dad. And you're not alone. You'll have plenty of help."
The farm was a flurry of activity. Cecil looked like a mad conductor leading the strangest orchestra ever seen. A number of tractors had been pressed into service, both conventional large tractors and even smaller yard versions. Wagons and carts of all sorts and sizes were being pulled behind them, as the vast amounts of vegetables were being picked. We parked by the camp for the security personnel and walked out into the field. I found Cecil standing at what had become a main road, directing tractors and even people who were pulling handcarts.
"Looks like you got your hands full, old buddy," I said by way of greeting.
He turned and smiled the toothy smile of an old man.
"It's getting a little sporty."
He reached out and shook my hand.
"Good to see you up and about. It's good for the people to see you up, too."
"I appreciate it. But I don't think they much care either way."
"Not so," he replied,
and nodded with his head towards the field, where a couple of people stood looking in our direction.
"There was a lot of talk here about what happened to you and whether you'd make it or not."
I laughed.
"What were the odds?"
Shaking his head, he replied,
6-1 in the beginning."
"And which side did you take?"
With a grin, he replied,
"I took the long. I knew you'd be back."
I gripped his shoulder and gave it a squeeze.
"I'm glad I didn't let you down."
Looking out at the hustle and bustle going on, I asked, "I see a lot more security folks. I heard there was a little pilfering going on." He nodded.
"There was, but we got a handle on it. It's just hungry folks. Shane took the ones we caught and turned them over to Mitch. He did the same thing you've done in the past. He made them stand in the market with a sign around their necks that read, 'I stole food from you.' It had the desired effect."
"It's difficult to deal with hungry people stealing food. Being harsh would just cause problems. Hey, what's with that field of corn over off 19? He smiled a sly smile.
"You found that, huh?"
I nodded.
"I planted that myself. I found an old planter and hooked it to my tractor. I didn't tell anyone about it. But there's a squad over there watching it."
"What kind of corn is it?"
"I had 2 50-pound sacks of feed corn. It ain't fit to eat like regular corn. But we went over to Reniger's and managed to come up with a couple of grist wheels. My plan is to grind it all into meal."
"Good idea. But I'd like some whole corn. I have an idea." Cecil cut me a conspiratorial grin.
"You going into the shine business?"
I nodded. "Purely medicinal, of course."
"Of course,"
he replied with a smile. Then, changing the subject, he asked,
"You heard anything more on what happened over Tampa way?"
"No, nothing yet. You?"
Cecil shook his head.
"Sheffield isn't saying anything. Actually, haven't seen much of him. I think it rattled him."
"Hell, it rattled all of us. But there isn't shit we can do about it. I wasn't going to go to town, but maybe I should take a ride down there."
"It'd be a good idea, I think."
I thought about it for a minute. Looking at him, I asked,
"So you digging a bunker yet?"
Cecil laughed.
"No, but there's plenty of it going on. A lot of folks are scared shitless."
"Plenty of that going around at the moment." I pointed at the field.
"Good luck riding herd on this chaos."
With a big smile, Cecil replied,
"This is the fun part."
I waved and walked back to the war wagon. As I approached, I could see Eric set a basket in the back.
"What's this?"
I asked, looking in.
"They told us to take this. Wanted us to take more, but I said no."
He shrugged.
"You know, with Dad's garden and all, I didn't think we needed it."
"Good call," I said as I climbed in. Looking at Jess, I said, "Let's go to town." I laughed to myself when we passed through the barricade at the edge of town. Sheffield's paranoia shone through here. More cars were added to the defenses as well as 2 of the captured MRAPs. There were also several men manning the position, with 1 notable change. All of them were wearing gas mask carriers strapped to their legs.
"This looks different,"
Jess commented as we pulled through.
"Yeah, I think that blast rattled old Sheffield."
As we headed towards the armory, she glanced sideways at me.
What do you think is going to happen?
I shrugged. Doesn't really matter. There isn't much we can do about whatever may happen. We're just along for the ride. We'll just deal with it as it happens. She laughed. So, like usual, then.
Like normal.
At the armory, I found Sheffield in his office. He and Livingston were standing in front of a large wall map.
Well, how goes the war? I asked as I walked in.
That's what we're trying to figure out, Livingston replied.
You guys really think those things are going to help? I asked, pointing at the gas mask strapped to his thigh.
Sheffield looked down at the one he wore.
They can't hurt. If we think there's fallout, we can at least put them on.
And then what? You won't be able to eat anything, drink anything. You don't have a fallout shelter.
What's happened to you? Sheffield asked. This doesn't sound like the Morgan I know. The guy that works his way through everything. No problem too big.
I'm just saying, it's a waste of effort. Besides, I don't think we'll be seeing any here. I hope, anyway.
Do you guys even have measuring equipment?
Livingston looked at Sheffield, and he shook his head.
Then how do you propose to know when to wrap that thing around your head? The frickin' government did away with civil defense and screwed us all.
If that were still around, then we'd have the equipment to sample the air. But we don't, and there isn't shit we can do about it now.
Livingston glanced down at the bag strapped to his leg.
I guess it is a little silly.
All I'm getting at, I replied, is we have plenty to worry about that we can do something about. The two men looked at one another, then at me.
I heard there are pickets out on 441. Have they seen anything yet?
Fortunately, no, Sheffield replied.
Good, that's good.
We've made contact with command again.
It's been moved to Eglin, Sheffield said.
They said it was only one missile and was in response to the sinking of the majority of a Chinese fleet off the coast of California.
If that's the case, why Tampa?
MacDill, Livingston replied. I gave him a no-shit look.
Send COM and SOCOM are there, Sheffield replied.
Were is right.
He shook his head.
Were, as in, they were dispersed.
Yes, losing the base was bad, but not nearly to the level it could have been. There wasn't much left there by the time they nuked it.
So it was the civilians that paid the price then?
I shook my head.
That's the way these things usually work out. You survive all the shit going on, and a damn rocket falls out of the sky and incinerates you in a fraction of a second.
If you're lucky, Livingston replied. From what we hear, there are still a lot of wounded. The Red Cross is actually just outside the exclusion zone trying to help.
That surprised me.
No shit?
The government is actually doing something now?
Not the government, Livingston said as he looked at Sheffield, who nodded and said,
Go ahead and tell him.
Tell me what? I asked.
Livingston took a deep breath and started.
This sounds worse than it is. There's been a military coup. The president has been useless from the beginning. They've done nothing to help people. Not to mention inviting foreign invaders into the country, Sheffield added.
Livingston nodded.
That too. So the military decided it was time for them to intervene. We are now officially under the control of the military. They've quickly organized some NGOs, you know, non-governmental organizations to help.
I know what NGOs are. Personally, I don't see it as a bad thing. Someone needs to take control of this shit sandwich. And who better than those used to working in chaos such as this? How long ago did it happen?
A couple weeks ago, Sheffield answered. It's not like it was a big deal. There wasn't any shooting or anything. We've got troops stationed outside the bunker that useless piece of shit is hiding in.
Livingston smiled.
Not for much longer, though.
Sheffield gave him a look, and he said,
What?
How's telling him going to change anything?
What are you talking about? I asked.
The president doesn't know it, but we're in talks with his protection detail to bring him out, Sheffield said.
Doesn't really matter, I shrugged. I don't care what happens to him. Won't change anything for us.
But why haven't you guys said something?
It's been classified, Livingston replied. I laughed out loud and turned in a circle, holding my arms out.
Who the hell are we going to tell around here?
We're still the army. It's just the way it works, Sheffield said. I laughed again.
Whatever works for you guys.
Curious, I asked, does the old man know?
Sheffield shook his head. That made me laugh again.
Oh, he's going to be pissed.
It was need to know.
And you don't think we needed to know? You don't think he's got contacts as well? You've seen that stack of radio equipment he's got.
It doesn't matter now who knows. It's a done deal.
I nodded and dropped into a chair.
Okay, so what's the plan?
We're still working on it. There's a bunch of Chinese troops running around on the Gulf Coast, and we've got a rather significant contingent of Russians and Cubans moving up from the south, Sheffield said.
Have you seen others since the incident over near Apopka?
We've heard some radio traffic from south of Orlando about seeing some armor running around, but we don't know what they saw.
For now, Livingston added, we're just keeping a careful eye out for them.
Do you guys have the weapons to deal with armor?
Not much, Sheffield answered.
That's concerning. What are the odds of getting some?
We're trying, said Livingston.
I had a feeling what their odds were. I wanted to talk to the old man.
All right, guys, I'm going to leave you boys to it.
All right, Livingston replied.
Glad to see you back on your feet.
I paused at the door and nodded, replying, Thanks, before heading out.
I rounded everyone up and got them back to the war wagon.
I'm driving, I told Jess, as I climbed into the driver's seat. An exaggerated pout formed on her face as she got in the passenger seat.
Any news? Eric asked.
As I wheeled out of the armory, I replied,
There's been a coup. The military is in charge now.
Chapter 2. The old man was stewing. He was sitting in a rocking chair on Danny's front porch, rocking slowly and staring at an indeterminate point in the yard. I was watching him closely, waiting for his response. It was kind of funny that I actually saw it first. When Linus Mitchell gets mad, really mad, if you're paying attention, you'll see it. A crimson line would slowly rise out of his collar and creep up and envelop his ears. Then those two furry caterpillars would start inching towards one another. Usually, when they met, the valve would pop. He glanced into the coffee cup sitting on the armrest of the chair. It was empty. Pop. He jumped to his feet, shouting,
Those rotten, gutless, spineless, panty-wasted, snot-nosed, fucking fucktards! Who the hell do they think they are to keep this kind of information from me? Need to know. Security? Bullshit! He bellowed. I got my top-secret clearance when those two twats were still shitting yellow and sucking on their mama's tit. I'm going to wring their fucking necks like the chicken shits they are.
Inwardly, I was smiling.
What's it matter? I asked.
He paused and looked at me as though I had just proclaimed myself king of Egypt.
What the hell do you mean, what's it matter?
He practically spat the last part.
Just that. What difference does it make to us here now? If there was a coup, it has no effect on us here. We still have to find food. We still have to get the power plant up and running. We still have to sniff around for Russians or Cubans.
doesn't change anything for us.
He stood there for a minute. Obviously, he heard what I said. He was looking right at me. But he stared at me like a man hearing one speak in a foreign language.
The point is, those two cocksuckers didn't tell us. I don't give a shit if there was a coup. It's about damn time. Needed to happen a long time ago, if you ask me.
So you're pissed you weren't told? Are you fucking serious? Don't you have your own back-channel communications? You've got all that radio gear over at your place. Go find someone to talk to.
It was like I slapped him in the side of the head. The old man stood there for a minute, blinking. Then he spun on his heels and stomped off into Danny's house. Ted was sitting on the porch and heard the entire exchange.
He's pissed, he said.
No, he's butthurt, and he shouldn't be.
He's probably going to stomp Sheffield's ass when he sees him.
I shrugged. Those two have been at one another since day one. The door flew open, and the old man stomped out, coffee cup in hand and thermos tucked under his elbow. Ian was sitting in the barrel saddle and offered some conciliatory words.
Fuck 'em, Top. We don't need those assholes anyway.
Sarge stopped and looked back.
Look here, you self-propelled sandbag. When I want your opinion, I'll damn well give it to you.
Ian laughed.
Holy shit, ain't heard that one in a long time.
But coming from a PX Ranger trench monkey, I'll take it as a compliment.
PX Ranger my ass, Sarge boomed. I earned this tab.
He gave Ian the finger before turning and walking off.
That should keep him occupied for the rest of the day, I said, getting a laugh out of Ian.
Where are the rest of the guys?
Ian nodded towards the road.
They're up at the bunker or off in the woods jerking off, I guess.
I shook my head and laughed. I could hear the laughs of children coming from the backyard and stood up.
I'm going to see what sort of trouble those young'uns are getting into back there.
Walking around the porch, the laughing grew louder. Thad and Danny were back there with the kids. One of those old harp-style lawn sprinklers was going, slowly sweeping its arc of water into the air. Thad had little Edie on his shoulders. Danny had Jace on his, and they were running and jumping through the streams. Little Bit was running between them as they all laughed and squealed. I smiled and shook my head as I kicked off my shoes and pulled my shirt off.
You better hurry up and get out there. That little girl needs her daddy, I heard Kay say.
I looked over to see her relaxing on a chaise lounge. She was holding a glass glistening with sweat in the heat of the day.
That's just what I was thinking, I replied.
Going out the screen door, I ran into the maelstrom of water and bodies and grabbed Little Bit up and swung her up onto my shoulders. She squealed with delight while I winced at the pain of my complaining ribs. But I ignored it and joined in on the fun. We formed a pinwheel as we ran after one another, jumping through the water and trying to catch the one in front of us and escape the one behind.
We're going to get you, Morgan,
Thad called from behind me.
Get the sheriff,
Jace called out.
Run, Daddy, run,
Little Bit shouted. It went on like that for a long time, far longer than I personally wanted, as I was sore. When Danny turned and ran into us, Edie and Little Bit grappled for a moment as they giggled.
There was a small play pool set up, and I headed for it, where I dumped Little Bit with a splash.
It wasn't long before the other two kids were in it as well. I walked over to a shady spot where several folding camp chairs were set up. Thad and Danny soon joined me. We sat in the shade and relaxed, still wet from the fun. It was cool as the water dried from our bodies. We laughed as Little Bit pulled the sprinkler over to spray on the pool.
Looks like they're having fun, I said. Oh, to be a child again, Thad replied.
Anything going on in town? Danny asked.
I told them about the engineers working in the power lines and about my visit to the farm and the frenzied harvest going on there.
It's about time, Thad said. We need that food.
I brought some home. They made me take it.
Good. We should get some too, Danny added.
There's more.
Looks like there's been a coup. The military took over and is trying to drag the president from whatever hole he's hiding in.
Neither of them thought much of it. Like me, they said it didn't really matter who claimed to be in charge. We agreed it was up to us to take care of things. No one was coming to help.
But it sure pissed the old man off, I said.
Thad looked surprised.
I wouldn't have thought he cared.
I laughed.
He's pissed he wasn't told. I guess Sheffield knew about it, but didn't tell him. That's what he's pissed about.
Thad smiled broadly.
I bet that did stick in his craw. What's he doing?
Shrugging, I replied.
He stomped off towards the house with a thermos of coffee under his arm. I'm guessing he's burning up the radios trying to talk to someone.
Good, Thad said. He needs a way to vent all that hate he's got in him.
Indeed, I replied.
Then I looked at Danny and asked, Did you find that crock? Nodding in the direction of the shed, he said,
Yeah, it's sitting over there.
You find what you needed to make it?
Well, I think I have, but we'll see.
I stood up and added, I'm about to go find out. Hopefully, in a week or two, we'll have some vinegar.
That'll be good. We'll have plenty to pickle here soon, Thad said.
I looked at the garden. It was lush and green.
How's the tomato crop looking?
Smiling once again, Thad replied,
Oh, we're going to have a bumper crop. It ain't been easy. I've had to check the plants twice a day and pick the hornworms off them. But we're going to have a bunch.
Good.
Miss Kay will be able to can a bunch, and we can store fresh ones in ash.
I can't believe that works, Danny replied.
I shrugged.
I know, but it does.
Danny looked at me and changed the subject.
You know, you're full of ideas. You know of any way we can cool the house, even a little? We keep the windows open and all, but it's just so damn hot.
I thought about it for a minute before replying.
Well, there is something I've been wanting to try. We'll need a bunch of 2-liter bottles and some plywood or something.
No, I have a better idea. We just need the bottles. I'll get the girls to find as many as they can and bring them here. Then we'll build it.
Laughing, Thad asked,
How are you going to cool a house with 2-liter bottles?
I gave him a big smile.
I'll show you later. Well, looks like I got work to do.
Standing up, I added,
I'll see you boys later.
I left them to watch the kids play and made my way to the shed, where I found Dalton sitting on the steps with the crock in his lap, examining it.
Don't get any ideas. That thing is mine, and I've got plans for it, I said.
He looked up.
I've always liked these.
Never had a use for them, really, just always appreciated the form.
He looked at it again, turning it over.
What's your plan for it?
I'm going to make vinegar with it.
No shit. You're still going to ruin that wine?
He stood up holding the crock.
I'll help. What do we need to do?
Wait here. I'll get the other stuff, and we'll get started. I went to the war wagon and got the grape skins and honey. Then we walked over to the house. Stepping over the lazy-ass dogs, we went inside. The girls were lying around the living room, reading or otherwise wasting time.
Hey, you two, I've got a job for you.
Leanne rolled over to look at me.
Oh, come on, Dad, it's really hot out.
Off your butts.
I need you two to go check every recycling bin in the neighborhood and bring back every 2-liter bottle you find.
Taylor was obviously confused.
What for?
I pointed at her.
Don't worry about that. Just go get them. I clap my hands. Let's go. On your feet. With absolutely no enthusiasm, they got up. And take a weapon with you, too. No one's going to mess with us here, Taylor said.
It's that kind of thinking that gets people killed, Dalton replied. You should never be more than an arm's reach from your weapon.
I turned my hip out and pointed to my pistol, adding, I was just playing in the sprinkler with the kids, and I had mine on. Take yours. Mel came out of the kitchen. Hi, Dalton. Then she looked at me. I know she hates unexpected visitors, even now. What are you doing? I held up the bucket of grape skins and the jug of honey. We're going to make vinegar. She looked back at the kitchen. Don't make a mess in my kitchen.
I'll make sure we clean up, Mel, Dalton said. Reluctantly, she replied, All right, I guess I'll go over and see Bobby.
Mel left and we carried our ingredients into the kitchen. Dalton suddenly stopped in his tracks and exclaimed,
Holy mother of God, man, what in the blue hell is that?
He was pointing above the sink.
I looked over and smiled. That's my biltong.
Setting the crock down on the island, he walked over to the sink and inspected the meat hanging there.
What is it, jerky?
Kind of, but better, I think.
I reached up and took a piece down. I bent it to test the moisture content. The meat flexed, but didn't crack. Taking out my pocket knife, I cut it in half. The outside was dry, but the inside was the consistency of taffy. I popped a piece in my mouth and chewed.
Not bad, I said,
offering the other half to Dalton. He took it and sniffed it, then took a bite. With a very serious look, he chewed the dry meat for a long time. Once he swallowed it, he looked at me and said,
That's the best damn jerky I've ever had. How the hell do you make it?
Taking another bite, I replied, It's pretty easy. I soak the meat in vinegar overnight. Then I salt it with coarse salt. Add a little coriander and hang it up to dry. Wait a couple weeks, and you've got jerky. He eyed the piece of meat in his hand.
This stuff has been hanging here for a couple of weeks?
Not quite, I replied. The longer you leave it, the drier it gets. I like it like this. He pointed at me with the piece of meat.
If this gives me the squirts, I'll have your head.
Then he took another bite. Laughing, I replied, It's the oldest preservation method there is. You'll be fine, I promise. He was still chewing when he replied,
Well, if you need vinegar to make this stuff, let's get to the chemistry.
I washed the crock out and dumped the grape skins in. Dalton leaned over the crock and sniffed.
Smells like it's already starting to ferment.
Good, I said, as I turned to the cabinet and took out a precious jar of Bragg's apple cider vinegar. It was the only one around, that I knew of anyway. Opening the bottle, I dumped about half of it in.
What's that for, Mother?
Dalton asked. Nodding, I replied,
Yeah, we don't have a mother, but this will add the necessary bacteria to get it started. We really need juice, but don't have any, so we're going with this. I'll just add water and mash it around a bit to make a juice of sorts.
Then what?
Well, we cover it with a cloth and wait. After I mix this up, if it isn't sweet enough, I'll add the honey. I was thinking about distilling it as well. Just depends on how it comes out.
This won't be like your normal white vinegar. That shit's actually made from natural gas in some cases.
Natural gas?
I nodded. The beauty of having the FDA in bed with the food industry. I took a large wooden spoon and stirred and mashed the skins. We took turns on it, working it for a long time. We mashed and stirred for what seemed like forever, stopping from time to time to taste it.
I don't think it's going to get any sweeter,
Dalton said after sampling it.
Me neither.
You think it's sweet enough?
It's not real sweet. Let's add the honey. I poured about a quart of honey into the crock and thoroughly stirred it in. This dramatically increased the sugar levels. I think this is better. Dalton tried it.
That's not half bad. The vinegar adds an interesting note to it.
I laughed.
Didn't know you're a sommelier.
He shrugged.
I was young and needed the money.
Since the sliding glass door had been shot out and replaced with plywood, the dining room was very dark. I carried the crock over to the corner beside the now defunct door and set it down. Then I covered the top with cheesecloth, securing it with a big rubber band I'd made by looping several together. Standing up, I looked down and said,
"Now we wait."
"How long?"
I shrugged. "I don't know. I'll check it after a week and see what it's like."
"I want in on that. I want to see how this all works."
"Cool.
We'll keep an eye on it then." Dalton looked at his watch.
"I have duty here in a bit. I'll catch you later."
He left, and I wandered into the living room and fell into the couch. It was nearly supper time, and I wanted to enjoy the quiet for a while. The house was hot, though, really hot. Even with all the windows open, it was probably 90 degrees inside. But you kind of get used to it, at least in the way that your mind accepts that this is the reality and there isn't much you can do about it. But now that I was thinking about cooling houses, I sat for a while thinking about the project to do just that. While noodling on this idea, I came up with a better way to do it. It would require a trip to the Save-A-Lot. I looked at my watch and got up to head to Danny's. I smiled, thinking about the response from everyone when Eric and Fred made their announcement. If it made me smile, I'm sure it was going to bring joy to everyone else. Thinking of this, I headed out the door. It felt cooler outside than it did in the house. Jamie and Perez were on the front porch when I walked up. Naturally, Perez was smoking. I just can't imagine how he still had any, but he did.
"How's tricks?" I asked.
"It's harder than a devil's ball sack," Jamie replied.
"Muy caliente," Perez added.
I laughed. "That's weird. A Spanish echo." Perez took a drag off his cigarette and shrugged. Looking around, I asked,
"You seen Eric and Fred?"
Jamie shook her head.
"No, why?"
"Oh, no reason." I went inside. Mel, Bobby, Miss Kay, and Mary were all in the kitchen. A warm scent filled the house. I don't know how they did it, but they always managed to cook something that smelled amazing.
"You didn't mess up my kitchen, did you?" Mel asked.
"Nope, it's clean."
I just didn't mention the vinegar flies that were sure to arrive in a few days.
"Did you get your vinegar started?" Kay asked.
"Sure did. Shouldn't take too long. Vinegar likes heat."
She mopped her brow with the bottom of her apron.
"Well, Lord knows we've got plenty of that."
"What's for supper?" I asked.
"Just go out there on the porch. You'll find out soon enough," Kay replied.
I did as instructed and went out to the porch. The kids were all sitting at one table with towels wrapped around them, their hair still wet. I went over to Little Bit and ran my hand through her wet hair.
"Did you have fun out there?"
She looked up, smiling.
"Yeah, we did. The little pool was really fun."
"So was the sprinkler,"
little Edie tried to say. I patted all of them on the head and took a seat at a table with Thad. He was working on a large pot of snap beans, stringing them. I reached into the pot and pulled out a handful and went to work.
"This is quite the haul," I said.
"This ain't nothing," he replied.
"This is really good to see, these beans." Thad smiled as he snapped a bean in several pieces.
"The summer has its blessings as well as its tribulations. Well, this heat is damn sure a test."
You come up with a way to cool the house off? Reaching for another handful, I replied, I think I have.
Well, anything will help.
I need to go up to Save-A-Lot for some materials. Taking another handful, Thad replied, I'll go with you.
You seen the old man?
I asked. He shook his head. No, not since this morning. I guess he's off stewing someplace.
Thad reached for another handful and replied, I think he is.
We heard more voices, and I leaned over to look into the back door. Mike, Ted, and Sarge were coming into the house. He didn't look like he was angry, and the guys were carrying on in their usual manner. Everything looked normal.
He looks all right to me, I said.
Time will tell, Thad said with a smile. The guys came out and took a seat. Mike was smiling in his usual smart-ass manner, and I asked what he was grinning about.
You'll find out soon enough.
What's the old man doing?
In there sniffing around, Miss Kay?
I asked. Mike rolled his eyes.
Enough already. I don't need the visual.
Sarge came out the door.
All right. The grown-ups are here. Knock off the bullshit. Follow me. We need to talk.
He continued out the screen door and into the backyard. I looked at Mike, and he shrugged.
Ted, what's this about? I asked.
He got up from the table and slung his rifle.
Come on. You'll hear it for yourself.
We all got up and went outside. Danny was out there putting around the well house, and Sarge called him over, too. What's this about? I asked. Sarge rocked on his heels for a minute before speaking.
Since those chicken shit bastards in Eustis don't want to share communication with me, I went over their heads.
I shook my head. You just can't get over it, can you?
Hell no, I can't. Who the hell do those weekend warrior wannabe shits think they're fucking with?
Why don't you three just get together and hate fuck already? Just get it over with, I replied.
Naturally, this got Mike to howling. It even got to Thad a little. He stifled a laugh. Shaking his head, he replied,
I swear, Morgan, you is a mess.
Oh, my God, Mike shouted. Hate fuck? That's it. That's exactly what they need to do. Just rip each other's clothes off, oil up, and hate fuck. You done?
Sarge asked. Mike held up a finger.
One more time. Hate fuck!
You know the problem with you?
Sarge asked.
Mike smiled with anticipation. You're still here. No one's killed your dumb ass yet.
That's because I'm the baddest man alive. No one can kill me.
Sarge looked at him seriously and in a quiet voice said, No, that's not it.
It's that your mother didn't have the fortitude to do the right thing and drown your stupid ass when you were a baby.
Or eat him when he was a baby. His bones were still soft, Ted added.
Mike held his hands up.
Haters gonna hate. Don't hate the player, hate the game. Would you just shut the fuck up for a minute so the grown-ups can talk?
Sarge spat.
Whatever, go ahead.
Shaking his head, Sarge said,
We're going to Eglin.
The Air Force Base?
Thad asked. Sarge nodded.
And just how the hell do you plan on doing that? It's got to be 400 miles up there, I asked.
Sarge looked at me like I was stupid.
We're going to drive. Unless you've got a plane up your ass.
Mike started to make a comment, but the old man shot him a look, and he let it pass.
You know what kind of risk that is? How much shit can go wrong on a trip like that?
Sarge shrugged.
We just have to be careful. We're going to take two trucks and plenty of fuel and even extra tires.
How are you going to haul all that? Danny asked.
Sheffield has trailers up there. We'll just get two of them.
and the fuel from that bladder tank. We're going to be bringing back a bunch of stuff as well, so we'll need the trailers.
Like what? I asked.
Ammo, rockets, mortar rounds, that kind of stuff. The general isn't too happy with Sheffield's lack of desire to go out and engage the enemy. We have foreign troops in the country. We need them gone.
What about a Geiger counter? Can they give us one of those? I asked. He nodded.
We're going to get some NBC stuff, too. They're already sending the 20th CBRNE command towards Tampa to evaluate the situation. We're getting equipment to monitor the situation as well.
That made me feel a little better.
That's good. When do you plan on making this kamikaze trip?
Soon as we can get the equipment together. We'll be gone for a week or so.
We who? I asked. He pointed at me. You're part of we. I need you, and the general wants to see you. You're the civilian head here, so you gotta go.
Like hell. I'm not going on what will surely turn into the Bataan Death March. You can kiss my ass. I've already done that once, and I ain't doing it again.
Sarge took a deep breath. Look, we both know you're going. I know you don't want to, but I know you will. We're also taking Dalton and Ian.
Who the hell is going to guard this place? I asked.
Just calm down. I'll tell Sheffield we need a few people for a few days. His guys won't mind getting out of town for a while, and it'll be less mouths for him to feed, so he won't give a shit.
I couldn't care less what he thinks, I shot back. You're missing the fucking point here. I'm not leaving my family to go in some wild-ass goose chase across Florida.
It's not a goose chase, Sarge said. This is a very clearly defined mission.
I folded my arms over my chest and asked, And just what is this mission?
Sarge gestured with a hand. I already told you what we're doing.
Going to get a bunch of ammo, rockets and shit? I pointed at him and said, I think you're just pissed at Sheffield and this is your way of rubbing his nose in it. You giving any of the crap we bring back to him?
Hell no! Sarge shouted. I've got my orders and this material is going to be used to fulfill that mission.
I nodded.
Yeah. Just pissing off Sheffield. That's what I thought.
Sounds like he's on to you, boss, Mike said.
Shut up, Mikey, Sarge barked.
Look, Morgan, it's on the up and up, Ted said.
I looked at him and he nodded.
Under one condition.
You name it, Sarge replied.
I want to get some stuff while we're there. I want some things we don't have now. Things to make everyone's life around here better.
Done. You don't even know what I want.
Sarge held his hands up.
Maybe not, but knowing you, you're not going to be asking for anything crazy, and I'm sure Fawcett will do it for you.
You damn sure better, I replied. Oh, and there's one more thing.
What?
Jabbing my finger into his chest with every word, I said, And you tell Mel. I looked up onto the porch and saw her sitting with Mary and Bobby. She was going to be pissed. The old man saw me and looked back over his shoulder. The look on his face was priceless.
That's just not fair, he said. She's going to hate me.
She's going to hate both of us, so you won't be alone.
She can't be first, but she can be next,
Sarge replied with a sigh.
Come on, supper's ready.
Mike leaned in close as he walked past me.
It's a long-ass list, like taping the pages of a phone book end to end, like a Manhattan phone book.
I laughed and slapped him on the back as we walked towards the house.
Maybe. But now he's going to be on Mel's bad side.
Don't sweat it, Morg,
This will be a milk run, Ted said. Your optimism is refreshing, if misplaced, I replied. Ted laughed and shook his head. The porch was now crowded. Everyone was there and in good spirits. We'd taken to running a large fan during meals. It helped to make it bearable between the airflow and the natural cooling the onset of evening brought. The fan was loud, but it couldn't be heard over this crowd. The kids all sat together at one table, laughing as they ate. Miss Kay was at the end of the picnic table, ladling stew into bowls and handing them out. Mike took his bowl and went to the kids' table and sat with them, eliciting loud giggles when he took his seat. Sarge looked at him as he waited for a bowl and said, "That's where he belongs." Miss Kay looked at him, shaking her head, saying, "Oh, be nice, Linus." As he reached for his bowl, he added, "I'll nice him to death." Kay pulled the bowl away, saying, "Keep talking like that and you'll go hungry." He smiled at her and replied, "Yes, ma'am." She handed him his bowl, saying, "That's better." I saw Fred, Jess, and Eric all sitting together at one table. I stepped up to Kay and she handed me a bowl. Holding it up, I took a long sniff. "This sure smells good, Miss Kay. What is it?"
"Just a little stew. Thad fixed up a selection from the garden, and I browned some beef. It's quite good."
"It always is. You ladies never cease to impress." She gave me a swat and gushed, "Oh, Morgan, go sit down." I walked by Eric and bumped into his elbow as he was taking a bite, spilling it onto his shirt. He looked up at me, and I said, "Sorry, I thought you said something." He looked around the room, then back at me. "You do it, or I will." He looked at Fred, who had a look of excited anticipation on her face. Then, looking back at me, he said, "Would you?" I leaned down and whispered in his ear, "If I do it, I'll start off saying you were too chicken shit to say it yourself."
"You wouldn't," Fred said.
I stood up and smiled.
"You willing to bet?"
Fred slapped him on the arm. Her eyes narrowed, and through clenched teeth, she said,
"You better not let him say that."
It made me smile. I looked up and said, "Hey, everyone." Eric was immediately on his feet, with Fred helping push him out of his seat. But he didn't hesitate.
"I've something to say," he said.
Then he looked down at Fred, holding his hand out. She took it and stood up with him, blushing.
"We have something to say."
He looked at her for a moment before continuing.
"Fred is pregnant."
All the ladies in the back porch began to pour out their excitement. They all came over to her and hugged her. It was exactly as I pictured it. Mel asked how far along she was, and Fred said she wasn't sure.
"I say 6 weeks," Jess said.
Kay put her hand on Fred's belly.
"Oh, you sweet thing. A baby. This is amazing news."
Even the guys hugged her. They shook Eric's hand. It totally interrupted dinner, but in a good way. Bobby was giving her a hug when she noticed the ring on her finger and asked,
"What is this?"
Fred held her hand up so everyone could see the ring, saying,
"Eric and I are married."
This seemed to cause a little confusion.
"When did you get married, and how?" Mel asked.
Eric and Fred both looked at me. Eric asked,
"You want to take this one?"
All eyes were now on me, waiting for an explanation. I chuckled.
"They're married because they say they are. We don't need a judge or someone to say so. They say they're married, so they're married."
There was more excitement, more hugs and handshakes. Miss Kay started to cry. Sarge went to her and put his arm around her, concerned, but she shooed him away.
These are tears of joy, Linus. You men just don't understand these kinds of things. I'm just so happy. She got